Hello and welcome to Lectionary at Lunch at Concordia Seminary. My name is Professor Tom Egger, and we are going to be looking at the Old Testament reading for the fourth Sunday after the Epiphany from Deuteronomy 18, verses 15 through 20. This is a great passage, a well-known passage, in which God promises through Moses, he promises the people of Israel that he will raise up a prophet like Moses who will speak his words to the people. And he calls upon the people to listen to the prophet that he will raise up for them. And he warns them that if a prophet dares to speak, having not been commanded by God, or who speaks in the name of other gods, he will die. And he warns that if the people refuse to listen to the words that he puts in the mouth of his own true prophets, that he himself will call the people to account. Ultimately, of course, this passage is fulfilled not only in the line of Old Testament prophets who follow Moses, but is ultimately fulfilled in Jesus Christ, the one true prophet, the ultimate prophet, in whom God places his words, his end-time salvation words, and God calls upon us to listen to him. Let's work, first of all, through the Hebrew text and then make a few comments on the history of Old Testament prophecy, but especially make a few comments on the theology of the prophet that God will raise up. Deuteronomy 18, verse 15. Navi mikir baka me acheka kamoni yakim laka Yahweh Eloheka elav tishmaun. The word order begins right away with an indefinite a prophet God is going to raise up. Moses is speaking, and so Yahweh is spoken of in the third person here. Also, the verse begins without any conjunction, just begins with the first noun. This is sometimes called a syndeton, and it serves to place emphasis on this verse. Hebrew likes to begin clauses with some kind of a conjunction, and especially with a vav. And when those are missing, there's a bit of a dramatic emphasis. There is another instance of a syndeton, not only at the beginning of this verse, but also before the last two words, which places an additional emphasis on this phrase, listen to him, you shall listen to him. The word order is a little bit unusual. We have, first of all, Navi, a prophet, and then Mikir Baka, from your midst, and Me Akeka, from among, a partitive men, from among your brothers. Kamoni, this is the preposition k, like or as, with a first-person common singular suffix, ni. The preposition k takes this kamo stem before certain pronoun suffixes, so like me. And then a third person masculine singular imperfect, he will raise up or cause to arise. This is the hifil form of the root kum, and the subject is coming further along in the clause here, Yahweh Eloheka, Yahweh your God will cause to arise for you. But the direct object here, the indefinite direct object, Navi, is placed all the way forward at the beginning of the clause. So that clearly is the focus here, a prophet. The word order which follows Navi, though, is interesting. You might expect that the emphasis in the verse would be on a prophet like Moses. But in fact, the first prepositional phrases that are focused upon after Navi are from your midst and from among your brothers. So the emphasis here is equally upon a prophet like Moses, but also that this will be a prophet raised up from your very midst, from the midst of Israel, from among the brothers of Israel. And of course, our Lord Jesus fulfills that aspect of the promise as well, as do the other Old Testament prophets. A prophet from your midst, from among your brothers, like me, Yahweh your God will raise up Lika for you. And then these last two words, Elav Tishmaun, to him. The prepositional phrase comes first here And so it's emphatic not only by the asyndeton, the lack of a conjunction, but also by the prepositional phrase preceding the verb, to him, y'all shall listen. Second masculine plural imperfect of shama. It has a paragogic nun on the end of the form, which sometimes occurs after the plural verb endings and doesn't have any additional meaning. The nun can just be disregarded in terms of parsing and interpreting. That final verb as an imperfect, to him you all will listen, is imperfect in form, but the imperfect oftentimes has a force that goes beyond simply the indicative future. The imperfect can function as a permissive, you may listen to him, or as an obligation, you ought to listen to him. But here, I think it's best to take the imperfect functioning as a command, you shall listen to him. On many levels, the wider context here argues against a simple future indicative, not the least of which reason is the fact that the people did not listen to the prophets that God raised up, who were from among the brothers and like Moses. Also, the Father's words at Jesus' transfiguration in the New Testament intentionally echo Deuteronomy 18, and they serve to confirm this imperative force, because God, the Father, as he speaks at Jesus' transfiguration in Greek, in the Greek record of his words, uses the imperative here. He says, "This is my Son, in whom I am well pleased. Listen to him." Matthew and Mark have akueta autu, listen to him. But Luke actually inverts the word order, and he very woodenly parallels this Deuteronomy 18 formulation. In Deuteronomy 18 here, we have to him you all shall listen, and that's exactly what the Father says in the Greek record of Luke. Autu akueta, to him listen. Verse 16. Kakol asher sha'alta me'im Yahweh Eloheka b'horev, b'yom hakahal le'mor. According to all, kakol, ka like as according to, and kol, all, according to all which you, masculine singular, Moses is referring to the people as a singular you here, as a single entity, according to all which, or everything which you asked. And then me'im is a combination of min plus the preposition im. Me'im is from with, literally, but this is a standard way in Hebrew of saying from when the object of the preposition is a person, rather than saying that you obtained something or asked something from someone. Simply with min, Hebrew will say you asked it or obtained it from with that person. According to all which you asked from Yahweh your God, and then b'chorev, locative or spatial use of bait at Horeb, and then a temporal use of bait on the day of, construct chain here, on the day of ha-kahal, on the day of the assembly, the day when they were all gathered there. This is referring to the incident in Exodus 19 and 20 when God has brought the people to Mount Sinai and they stand listening to God himself booming out in his divine voice, declaring his own name and declaring that he has brought the people out of Egypt, out of the house of slaves, and then also giving them his Ten Commands. The phrase here, according to all which you asked from Yahweh your God, is modifying, it could be modifying the command in the previous verse, listen to him. In other words, listen to him according to everything which you asked. In other words, why should you listen to the words of this prophet? Because you yourself requested of Yahweh your God a mediator. But probably a better way to read it is to read it as modifying Yahweh's action of raising up a prophet like Moses. Why? It answers the question, why is Yahweh your God going to raise up from your midst, from among your brothers, a prophet like me? He's going to do that according to your own request, according to everything which you asked from Yahweh your God at Horeb on the day of the assembly. The second half of verse 16 then records specifically what the people's request was of Yahweh, lay more, saying, and it records their words. And notice the way that the words of the people are spoken in the first person singular. Again, Israel is being treated as a single entity here. Lo osef lishmoa et kol Yahweh Elohai v'et ha'esh hagadolah hazot lo ere od v'lo amut. That first verb form there is a little bit difficult. Osef, it looks like a call participle from asaf, but that wouldn't make much sense here. And so it's probably best to read it. Also, it's negated by lo, and the participle is usually negated by ain in Hebrew. It's probably best to read it as a defective hifil imperfect. Most English translations read it as a cohortative, let me not continue. But another way to read it is to read it simply as not a cohortative, but a first-person common singular imperfect in the modal sense of, I cannot continue. So I cannot continue, the hifil of asaf oftentimes leads into an infinitive, and the sense is continue to do something. I cannot continue lishmoa, to hear, the infinitive construct of shema. I cannot continue to hear, direct object, the voice of Yahweh my God, and, direct object, ha'esh, ha'gadolah, ha'zot, this great fire, lo, ere'eh, I cannot see or look upon, od, any longer, v'lo amot, so that I will not die. So the sense here is, and I will not die. It's just the imperfect of moot. Verse 17. Vayomer Yahweh Eli, Heitivu Asher Deberu. And Yahweh said, Eli, to me, remember Moses is speaking to the people here, and Yahweh said to me, and he's recalling what Yahweh said in response to the people's request at Sinai on the day of the assembly at Horeb. Here's what Yahweh says, Heitivu asher deberu. They have done well. This is the hifil perfect of yatav. Yatav means to be good, but in the hifil means to do well or to do something good. And so they have done good. And the sense here, this final clause of verse 17 is really shorthand for they have done well with respect to asher deberu, what they have spoken. They have done well with respect to what they have spoken. The idea here then is that the request for a prophet is not merely the idea of the people and their pleasure, but it's also Yahweh's idea and Yahweh's pleasure. And so he hears their words, don't speak to us any longer, and he accedes to that willingly. He thinks it's a good idea to speak instead through a prophetic mediator. Ultimately, of course, this has Christological implications. God's will ultimately is to deal with humanity through Christ, the one servant, the one prophet that he will raise up. Verse 18, Navi Akim Lahem Mekerev Akehem Kamoka. A prophet I will cause to arise. Again, the first common singular imperfect hifil of kum, I will cause to arise, or I will raise up a prophet, I will raise up for them from the midst of their brothers, Mekerem Akhehem, Kamoka, like you. Notice that God raises up a prophet who is for them, for the people, and from their midst, from the midst of their brothers, but he does not say like them. The prophet will not be like them, but will be like Moses. Venatati devarai, and I will give my words, or I will put my words, befiv, in his mouth. The preposition bait on the noun pe with a third masculine singular ending, in his mouth. V'diber, and he will speak, vav consecutive perfect, pl, and he will speak, alehem, to them, direct object, kol, a share, atzavenu, everything which I command him. That enu ending here at the end of the verse is actually a third masculine singular energic ending on the root, on the verb tsava, the pl first person common singular perfect of tsava, I will command. He will speak to them everything which I will command him. Verse 19. V'haya ha'ish asher lo yishma el devarai asher yidaber bishmi. And it will be that v'haya at the beginning is a verb with an impersonal subject. The sense here is, and it will be the case that, and then it continues with the thought, and it will be the case that the man who will not listen, lo yishma, to my words, plural, el devarai, that patak yod ending shows that words here is plural, to my words, which I will speak, or which he will speak, sorry. And it will be the man who will not listen to my words, which he will speak, referring to the prophet God will raise up, and he will speak these words, bishmi, in my name. The preposition bait on the noun shame with a first common singular subject. So three elements there, bishmi, in my name. And now we get the main clause of verse 19. Everything up to this point has really been an extended object of the preposition. And so the last clause here in the end of verse 19 is, I myself will seek from with him, or from him. The same combination of from with a personal object of the preposition that we saw earlier. Who is the him? It is the extended object of the preposition that we see earlier in the verse. I myself will seek from him, from whom? The man who will not listen to my words, which he will speak, the prophet will speak in my name. Notice the emphatic use of the pronoun anoki here. Ed Rosh, I will seek, from Darash itself communicates first common singular subject, but the extra pronoun anoki here makes it emphatic. I myself, Yahweh himself, will seek from with him. What does this mean here, darash, to seek from? Well, darash, when followed by me'im, as it is here, Brown Driver Briggs, definition 5, glosses as to require, demand, or exact punishment, blood, or satisfaction from a person. So the sense here, darash sometimes simply means to ask or inquire or seek, but here it has the specific sense, you might say, to call to account or to seek reparation or payment or punishment from. So it is a threat. God is threatening to punish those who will not listen. Verse 20, ak, it begins. Ak oftentimes has an emphatic force, or sometimes called an asseverative force, surely indeed. But here at the beginning of verse 20, it functions as a restrictive conjunction expressing contrast with the preceding thought. This is how all the English versions take it, and they simply translate it, but. Ak hanavi asher yatsid ledaber davar bishmi, et asher lo tzivitiv ledaber. The prophet who, and the verb here, yatsid, the verb is a hollow root from tzid. Here it's hifil, imperfect. It literally means to boil. The prophet who boils to speak a word in my name. But most often in the Old Testament, it's used in its extended and much more common meaning to act presumptuously. And with the infinitive following it here, the sense is to presume to. So, but the prophet who presumes, lidaber, to speak, And now davar is the direct object, a word, bishmi, in my name. And then direct object, asher. Here, the et asher is really acting basically to further describe the word which he will speak. So the prophet who will speak, who will presume to speak a word in my name, that which I did not command him, or a word which I did not command him to speak, command him ledaber, to speak. And now the va'asher in the middle of the verse gives a second description or a second modification of the prophet. The first asher clause describes Hanavi, the prophet who presumes, and now we have another alternative situation, but the prophet who, va'asher, yedaver, speaks b'shem Elohim acharim, who speaks in the name of other gods. So there's two categories here. The prophet who presumes to speak in Yahweh's name, however, he's not commanded to speak, or at least the word he speaks is not a word that Yahweh has commanded him to speak. That's one category. And the second is a prophet who speaks in the name of other gods, which is always a false prophet. And the final clause talks about the fate of these two prophets, these two categories of prophets. Meit Hanavi Hahu. Hanavi Hahu is that prophet, and umate is the vav consecutive perfect. That prophet will die. All right, what to make of these verses, and how are they useful for preaching? Well, first of all, it's, I think, significant to notice that what is going on in Deuteronomy in this section of the book is the establishment of the various offices and officials among the people of Israel. Moses is standing and speaking to the people on the verge of going into the promised land. He has talked about judges and the judicial system in Deuteronomy 16 and 17, and again in Deuteronomy 19, he speaks about the work and the position of judges. In Deuteronomy 17, verses 14 to 20, Moses gives God's will for the obedient king over the people. He sets up the institution of the kingship. And in Deuteronomy 18, verses 1 to 18, he speaks about ministering Levites and priests. And then here in 18, verses, I guess that should have been verses 1 to 8, he speaks about the ministering Levites and the priests. And he speaks here in verses 9 to 22 in chapter 18 about the true prophet and the office of prophet in Israel. Israelite prophecy here in Deuteronomy 18 is presented in the context of, it follows, verses which warn against the divination and soothsaying of the pagan nations around Israel. God calls all of these efforts to receive words of the future or words from the supernatural as abominations. Israel, on the other hand, unlike all these nations which contact soothsayers and diviners, Israel is to be tamim, blameless with Yahweh your God. The implied contrast with pagan prophecy is that the word of the prophet that God puts in the prophet's mouth is the word of God himself, whereas all of the human efforts at soothsaying and divining are simply the word of man. The mediation of a prophet, it's also important to note, is something that was requested by the people themselves at Horeb because of their experience with the terrifying voice of Yahweh there. And it's also important to note that God himself found this institution pleasing. And so God's plan is to deal with the people like this on an ongoing basis. He will raise up a prophet like Moses. On the first level, this refers to the institution of prophecy throughout the generations in Israel. Right away after Moses' death, Joshua takes the reins. In fact, while Moses is still alive, he is presented as Moses' legitimate successor, and he is chosen by God to lead the people and to speak to the people for God. The book of Joshua opens by presenting Joshua as Moses' legitimate successor, yet there is also a sense in which he is a subordinate successor to Moses, not quite like Moses. He is described, Moses in Joshua 1:1 is described as the servant of Yahweh, whereas Joshua in that same verse is described as the minister of Moses or the servant of Moses. And whereas Moses spoke to the Lord face to face and spoke Yahweh's words to the people, Joshua also receives revelation from the Lord, but he is commanded in the opening chapter of Joshua to devote himself to the book of the Torah of Moses. And so his office as prophet is founded upon or established upon, you might say, the foundation of the original Torah of Moses. Throughout Israel's history, God continues to send them prophets, yet none of them are quite like Moses. And the key verses here are Deuteronomy 34:10, which deliberately invokes Deuteronomy 18, stating that a prophet has not yet risen in Israel like Moses. And the thought is that from the perspective of the final editor of Deuteronomy, who puts these closing verses in about the death of Moses and that a prophet like him has still not arisen, from his perspective, even though prophets have come, none of them have quite fulfilled this prophecy. Another important passage is Numbers 12, verses 6 to 8, which speaks about how unique Moses is among the prophets. He does not receive dreams and visions from the Lord, but God speaks to him face to face, mouth to mouth. Exodus 33:11 says that the Lord spoke to Moses face to face as a man speaks to a friend. And Exodus 34 presents Moses coming back into the camp with a shining face after meeting with God. In all these ways, although the Old Testament prophets are in a sense like Moses, none of them completely fulfill the prophecy. The sense is then, and the sense did develop historically, that a great prophet was yet to come. And the New Testament clearly embraces that promise and points to its fulfillment in Jesus Christ. Some key Bible passages in this regard are John 5, verses 43 to 47, where Jesus is speaking to the religious leaders about their refusal to believe his word and invoking the warning from Deuteronomy 18. John 12 is a similar passage in which Jesus talks about his words being those given to him by the Father. Hebrews 1, verses 1 to 2, sets Jesus alongside the train of the Old Testament prophets, but also points to him as a unique person in this progression of prophets. Matthew 17, verse 5, the Transfiguration account, where the Father himself repeats these words from Deuteronomy 18 with regard to Jesus, listen to him. And especially Acts 3, verses 22 through 23, where Peter, in his sermon, quotes from Deuteronomy 18 and says this is fulfilled in Jesus. But interestingly, he points not only to the fulfillment in Jesus as Jesus the great prophet, but also in the fact that God promises to raise up a prophet like Moses. And Peter refers to the fact that God has raised Jesus. This is a post-Easter sermon, so it's a very interesting tie-in and a very interesting claim that this passage is fulfilled not only in Jesus' teaching, as the accompanying gospel reading for this Sunday emphasizes, Mark chapter 1, Jesus' teaching with great authority, but that Deuteronomy 18 is actually fulfilled in Jesus' resurrection. God will raise up a prophet like Moses. To listen to the words of God's prophets is a matter of life and death. That is a theme throughout Deuteronomy 18. This is a life or death matter. Those who speak falsely in God's name will die. Those who refuse to listen, God will require it of him. And here the warning is implied destruction. 2 Kings 17, verses 7 to 23, especially 2 Kings 17, 13 to 14, talk about summing up the history of the northern kingdom and reporting their destruction, lay the blame on the fact that the people sinned against the Lord, they broke his commandments, they worshiped other gods, and especially when he sent them prophets to warn them, they refused to listen to the word of his prophets. As early as Genesis chapter 3, this is the great problem of humanity, refusing to listen to the voice, the command of Yahweh, and instead listening to other voices, the voice of the serpent, the voice of my wife, the voice of my own eyes. So there are a lot of law dimensions to this text. Listen to him. We must listen to the words of the Lord. It's a matter of life and death. But having said that, that it's a matter of life and death, there's also a great gospel dimension here. God desires to speak to his people. God's ultimate speaking to his people has come through the ministry and the person of Jesus Christ. And the words that God speaks to us through Jesus are beautiful, life-giving words of promise. And it would certainly be appropriate in preaching on this passage not only to draw the connections to Jesus, but then to simply revel in some of those rich, specific promises that God has spoken to us in the very words of Jesus, and to hang on to those words and rejoice in God's invitation to us to listen to him, and to know that in the speaking of this man, Jesus Christ, God himself, the God who made us and the God who one day will judge us and preserve us forever, that God is speaking to us with certainty, and that everything that has been spoken through the mouth of Jesus, we can say, thus saith the Lord, and particularly through the ministry of Jesus, who speaks not only as a prophet speaking the Father's words, but also speaks to us as God himself. The Lord bless your preaching on this passage.